everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Humming Fools. That's right. It's Humming Fools. It's plural. There's not just one of us. I am joined by Noah.
What's going on?
Noah, it is always a pleasure to see you.
Absolutely.
You comfort my soul. I wasn't feeling too hot before you came here. And now I feel
better.
Well,
you look hot.
Thanks, man.
And do you need to open a window or?
Oh, man. It's a little steamy in here. No, not that kind of hot. And I am your other host, Kyle. Happy to be here. Happy to be with you guys. Hopefully you heard our latest, besides this one, episode. We interviewed someone again, which is fun. It's an aspect of the show that we want to keep doing, keep getting better at. So if you haven't listened to it yet, check out the latest interview with TJ Williams, a musician, a father.
A son, probably.
I assume so, based on just how biology works. today's topic, beautiful Humming Fools listeners, is...
guilty pleasures.
Thank you. My brain pathway was if I try hard, I can remember, but I should just look. But then when I looked, I was totally in the wrong area.
Yeah.
So then I just was left not sure what to do. And you came in and saved me.
Yes.
I was...
Because I took notes.
That's right. And that is a good transition to basically just jumping into the topic. Noah's going to be leading us with strong hands on this one. It's true. He is. Standing up when we can't, not leaving me hungry for love. But before we get into that, Noah...
Yeah.
I think, we should just quickly kind of talk about what a guilty pleasure is, and then maybe we can give some examples to our listeners. Do you want to start with the definition?
Yeah, sure. Webster's Dictionary defines... No. So the shortest version of the definition that I could come up with or find was it's basically a guilty pleasure is something that you happen to enjoy that... The global consensus on it is that it's not necessarily good, basically.
Okay.
And then the more I thought about it and looked into it, the more there were variations of that, but that seems to be kind of the distilled version of that.
And I love distilled things.
Yes. Whiskey.
Yes. You get it. Okay. Fantastic. Yeah. Now, and so with that definition laid out there, it's all put out on the table. Can you give us some examples of stuff that fit that criteria for yourself?
For me?
Our friendship?
Yeah.
Me as a person? It doesn't work for everyone else, but you like it?
Kyle, I don't care what everyone says.
Yeah.
I think you're all right.
Thanks, man.
the first examples that came to mind were music, which I think is a really easy one to go to for a lot of people. Because I think everyone has the stuff that they listen to that they're like, man, people would not think that I should be listening to this, but I do. But the first one that came to mind was Taylor Swift for me, but specifically her album Red.
Okay.
Yes. Which was sort of her transitional album between country and pop. And I think that is by far her best album. And to this day, I still listen to it. I don't listen to stuff before that really. And I don't really listen to any of the stuff after that for some reason. And maybe it was like a time of life thing. You know, I was in college and there was something about it that just worked for me. And I don't know.
Is that the one that has Blank Space and Shake It Off in New York, or is that the one that's after?
That's the one that's after.
What's that one called?
1989.
I like that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was her first full pop album.
So what are some of the and this is really just for me right now,
yeah,
this moment.
Being no, that's
curious.
Fine.
What's on Red? What are the popular ones on Red?
Red had, so it had some song, the hits off of it I didn't like.
What were the hits?
But it had...
I'm not going to know the lesser ones.
I think We Are Never Getting Back Together.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Off of that.
Okay.
And
We are never, ever getting back together. It was something like that.
Oh, you obviously don't know it.
and I'm proud.
You're on the right track, though.
Thank you.
Again, it's my guilty pleasure.
Sure.
No, but that was kind of that era. I'm trying to remember what the other big one was. Off of it. Okay. It had, Red was pretty big. So we are never, ever getting back together. 22. That was a big one.
I loved having that sung to me when I turned 22.
Yes. And the one that I couldn't remember that was big was I Knew You Were Trouble.
I knew you were trouble when you walked in. Yeah. Okay. Anyways. Nice.
But but those were the hits, but it had some really good songs on it, I think. Anyway.
Mm.
When I was kind of doing some research for the episode, I found this quote, apparently, allegedly by Tom Hiddleston. I don't know how accurate that is.
Tom, hopefully we do you right.
It was a generic quote on top of some
sexy nondescript picture of him.
Background. No, I didn't have a picture of him.
Oh, okay. That's disappointing. He's an attractive man.
But apparently he did say, I never feel guilty about my pleasures, which I thought was a great mentality. And over the years, that's what I've tried to be like, where I'm like, I'm going to enjoy what I enjoy. It doesn't matter mm-hmm. what people think, which is hard. And if you're a film major,
yeah,
you will get chastised for promoting that type of thinking.
That's true. There's right and there's wrong.
That is correct. And that's a whole, we're going to get into that.
Oh yeah. We're going to get into it.
or your examples.
Well, before we get into that, I think that's I want to save the bulk of the discussion for the rest of your tasty points, but it is a funny thing to where Taylor Swift, maybe I don't know if just in general she is, or that the album is a guilty pleasure for you, but, or maybe it's the same thing. But,
mostly the album.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, it's like, there'd be other people who are like, how can that be a guilty pleasure for you? It's just objectively good. Like the way I've heard people describe Taylor Swift is close to a god, like in terms of like when they talk about her songwriting and her performance and her evolution.
Sure.
And even like her ownership of her brand, mm-hmm. they're always very impressed.
Oh,
and
yeah.
like they go on and on about it. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or that I disagree. I really am just kind of, I'm, I guess, indifferent. I don't really have that much of an opinion on her. And so, but I definitely view the
1989.
The 1989 album as a guilty pleasure. Mm. I have it in a playlist on Spotify called Super Manly Music.
Oh,
the playlist is called, so that people don't think that there's anything not manly in there. And then
Kyle, what does it mean to you to be manly?
Well, see, that is the funny thing that ties into.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. Yeah.
Guilty pleasure is it comes from our perception of what we think other people think of us mm-hmm. to where is like, if something, we think something's not cool, then we'll probably label as that to where if everyone, likes something, we wouldn't necessarily think of it as a guilty pleasure. Thus the title guilty, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I just thought that is interesting as we get further into this episode, is that, you know, this content can mean different things to different people.
Yes.
To where you may not be necessarily super proud of it or own it in the sense of like, oh yeah, she's a great artist. Mm-hmm. Like she's one of my top favorite people, or that's like mm-hmm. one of my favorite albums. It's more of like, I listen to this I really like it, but I'm not going to put it on like a real list for mm-hmm. something. That's very interesting to me. And so I just wanted to point that out because I do know that those people put her up there in that way.
Oh, yeah.
And so hopefully they don't find you and they don't do terrible things to you because I've also heard that her fans are passionate.
Yeah, a little bit.
Un poquito. Yeah. That's Spanish for a little bit. Oh, and the Spanish lesson has been brought to you by Señor Kyle. For me, guilty pleasure, I'll dive quickly back into that playlist. I got Kesha / K Dalla, as I like to refer to her as. Mm-hmm. And again, I feel torn about that because, and again, we'll get into the conversation, but I'm like, does she know what she's doing? Is she just playing the game with the pop music?
Oh, yeah.
And these lyrics, they're dumb, mm-hmm. but they get me riled up. They get me pumped, and I'll listen to them secretly at work. You know, Bottle of Jack, you know, all mm-hmm. that stuff. Mother Bleeping Woman, that's a good one. Yeah. I'm censoring myself for you, audience. Know Ooh. That. I'm controlling it.
But in the editing, you should put a real beep so it sounds like you actually said
so I sound
word.
Bad.
That's right.
Get the bad girls. I have Kesha. I have Taylor Swift. I have Katy Perry.
Oh, yeah.
I'm ashamed to say this. I have some Glee. some Glee soundtrack.
Do not be ashamed, Kyle.
That's the thing is that, you know,
we've talked about this.
Okay. I didn't know if you were going to own that with me. So I tried to keep you out of it. I wasn't going to say, okay. I like first and second season of Glee. I'm sorry. Yes. / I'm not sorry.
No, it was good. Sorry. This is what this episode is about. Ooh. At the core, this will be the moral of it at the end. Do not be sorry for your guilty pleasure.
That's right. Well, I think, again, this is just showing the podcast is really designed to make me more comfortable as a person.
Yeah.
I get affirmed and then I get to like vent like the secrets that I've had, you know, built up. There's some Glee in there. And then I think some Nicki Minaj. I think that's the most guilty for me. Yeah. Nicki, I'm just like, girl, like, this isn't good. But that the song about the bass, that boom, ba dum, boom, boom.
Yeah, super bass.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You said that sassily, but I really didn't know. So don't shame me. So that's music. So that stuff I will make sure to actively switch my Spotify to private session while I listen to it, because I don't want it showing up in the corners so people can see it.
I hope that by the end of this recording, you'll be comfortable enough to where you don't have to do that.
Folks, if you follow me on Spotify or friends me on Spotify, check in like 2 weeks to see if anything of that stuff pops up on the side.
But you also won't know if he keeps it private.
That's true. Yeah. They'll look out for those artists.
Yeah. There you go.
Transitioning to film, I have a specific genre of film that I really like that I view kind of as guilty pleasures. But again, this is good. We'll get into the argument of exactly how, I don't know. This is going to be a very authentic and non-rehearsed conversation for the people because this is kind of the first time that I'm thinking about a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
I love creature features. My family loves creature features and we will watch them together and just like laugh and holler at sometimes how bad they are. But
yes,
it's not fully from them being terrible. It's like there's a desire to, and it's kind of morbid and I haven't come to terms with it yet, but there's a pleasure in watching people get picked off by a large animal or a sneaky animal. And especially if you throw in some like adventure and humor in there, like it can just be really enjoyable. So there's good films that fall into the pleasure, you know, that fall into like being art and aren't guilty pleasures. Jaws is one of them.
Oh, yeah.
That's in my top 10 movies of all time. Like I love that movie so much. Would love to talk about it in excess more, but a film that is not good, that I love. Oh. Well, that would fall in there, but no,
that's just Jaws, though. unless I'm remembering Jaws wrong.
Wait, in Jaws, there's a tornado in Jaws, right?
At what point does the shark fly?
And where is the chainsaw cutting?
That's right.
Anaconda. With Ice Cube and Jennifer Lopez and a young Owen Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is just hilarious to me because it's filled with such terrible dialogue. I think John Voight's also in it. I'm not sure if that's the correct actor, but he plays like this crazy,
I think you're right,
this crazy snake wrangler who's doing this weird accent and he just keeps calling this one girl baby bird. And it's just like, it's so silly, but it's again cool to see the snake, and the snake actually has some cool animatronics that they did with it. And then also the CGI, computer-generated imagery, for you non-movie friends. Not everyone knows what it means. I'm trying to help. I'm not trying to fluff my intellectual brain, as I said earlier. But the digital effects are actually pretty impressive. And I've also heard that they were super expensive to where it was like millions of dollars for a certain amount of seconds, per second, which is just unfortunate that they were put towards this movie. But it's like, it's not good. And so there really is a joy in watching some of the terrible lines. The fact that Ice Cube is listening to his own music in the movie.
Yeah.
It's playing on the radio. There's also a shot where they enter like this lagoon and they didn't film the boat leaving. So what they thought was a good idea was just to reverse that shot later in the scene.
Yeah.
But the problem is though, I mean, there's lots of problems with that, but the most obvious problem is that there's a waterfall in the background. And so then you just see the water rising up and it's just hilarious.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think a lot of those movies, like Creature from the Black Lagoon, mm-hmm. like an older one, which again, for its time, maybe, you know, that's the hard thing about it.
Yeah.
Is there's lots of factors to, yep. to pull in, but yeah, Creature Features. And then Anaconda specifically mm-hmm. is a big, big guilty pleasure for Papa.
Nice. I think, I don't know why I have this idea in my head, but I feel like there was a lot of people, maybe for our generation, or maybe the generation before us, that was a lot of people's first R-rated movie that they saw. Because I've heard it spoken about mostly in that context, which I thought was kind of interesting. Anyway.
Yeah. Is there anything else that's off the top of your mind, or do you want to hop into Deleting Me with Strong Hands?
I think I had Corny Romance as one of my, like, just rom-coms. I feel like most people sort of have a soft spot for a certain type of romance in movies, and it doesn't have to be, you know, it can be corny and, you know, feel good
mm-hmm.
And you'll enjoy it. But anyway, that was one of yeah. And it's funny. I have on my music list, I have Air Supply, which
I don't even know what or who that is.
Oh gosh. I don't know. They have a song called All Out of Love, which you may have heard.
I'm all out of love. I'm so lost without you. Oh, okay.
That's
nice.
Air Supply.
Didn't know.
I think they wrote it. Maybe it was a cover. But anyway, they're an Australian duo.
Oh.
And it's very much that kind of soft rock, mm-hmm. 80s, 70s music. But a lot of things like that, I only find out like way later, because I keep it to myself. And I find out way later, oh, you're not supposed to like that. Or mm-hmm. like, or I see a reference in a movie and someone's like, oh, really? That thing? And I'm like, what's wrong with that thing?
Yeah.
And yeah. then you find out something's a guilt, you're supposed to consider it a guilty pleasure if you do enjoy it. And it's like, well, it's too late now. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of have to own it. But anyway, I thought that was kind of...
Well, speaking of owning, that makes me think right now of like... I know you and I talked about this. This is easier for me to admit than the Glee thing. Nickelback was something that I originally just liked.
Yeah.
And then it became a guilty pleasure because society told me that I shouldn't like it.
Exactly.
And so I kept it secret and hidden in my heart.
Yeah.
And so now I'm coming out to the whole world.
Oh, that Kyle.
I'm not a huge Nickelback fan.
No.
I can't really name more than maybe 3 or 5 songs, but Hero, I listen to that crap all the time. And yes, there's that Spider-Man connection. I don't know if that's Nickelback or it's under just Chad Kroeger. I don't know
sure.
the difference, but that is a weird thing. And so this is a thought for you. Mm-hmm. Another, what I was going to say was a guilty pleasure was The Room, the terrible, badly made film by Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah.
But it's gained cult status and so much fame that... it's popular now
to
and
like it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I that changes its classification, yes. right?
Well, so that was one of my questions. I was like, what's the threshold where enough people acknowledge something's bad and start enjoying it? Like, when does it graduate to becoming a cult classic?
Mm.
I know there's music that's like this too, that maybe like came out in the 80s or 90s and then like was critically panned at the time. And then now it's like, oh man, that's my jam. Like that's so 90s. And mm-hmm. then you're like, it's cool to like it again.
Yeah.
I don't know what that line is between the two, but it is kind of interesting. So hold on to your guilty pleasures. Cause eventually they'll come back in vogue as most things do. Yeah.
Kesha's going to be remembered as like a music icon of her time. And
but it's,
be like
yeah.
a statue
and it's
of
interesting
her.
Because Kesha falls into this category of, it's like the Transformers thing where it's like these people have like figured out some kind of formula and they're running with it mm-hmm. and it works for so many people.
Yeah.
Like the amount of success that they get from doing that kind of stuff or someone who's like very self-aware of it. And I know that she is and like her music now is very different than it was before. And she was very like it. She's supposedly very intelligent and all this stuff. So, but, mm-hmm. like Pitbull, for example.
Oh,
yeah. I can't listen to his music.
It's so bad,
but so many people do and love it. And he knows that. And he's like just this regular guy. And, you know, like if you watch interviews with him and stuff like that, he's just very self-aware. Mm-hmm. But you know, he does it because people enjoy it and people get to enjoy that stuff. And he gets to, you know, it's, I think it was like a Rolling Stone interview with Swedish House Mafia, or an electronic music band that were pretty big a couple of years ago. But they were saying, oh yeah, no, in 10 years, people will not be listening to us. Like we fully expect to die off musically. And that's fine. We love doing this right now. And people love, you know, coming to our shows right now. He was saying, you know, in 50 years, people will still be listening to Bob Marley. Mm. You know, it's different music for different eras, or, you know, for different amounts of time. Mm-hmm. It's all about the context. It's all about who wants to, you know, consume that stuff. And so anyway, that's a whole thing with the guilty pleasures. Is it a guilty pleasure if it's really, that's what it was made for?
Yeah.
You're not really being tricked into, you know, considering it a guilty pleasure, but can you really consider it that if that was the whole point of it being made was, you know, it's not supposed to be the highest caliber of that thing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I think and maybe this opinion will evolve as we continue down this yellow brick road together. Mm-hmm. I'm Dorothy.
Reference to the Wizard of Oz.
What character would you like to be?
Ooh, Toto.
Nice. The dog or the band?
Both.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think the not epiphany, because I won't claim it to be that big of a deal, this thought. So more just, again, newly formed opinion. But it must come down to just general public perception. Because, if the intent is I'm going to make this purposely bad, or I'm purposely not going to care about the quality, but I'm going to be strategic with how I make it because I know it'll get people. Still, though, if there's this perception of like, oh, that music's trashy, even if like lots of people like it, but kind of like the more critical / like average man's like, nah, I can't stand that. Uh-huh. Then I think the music would still be considered a guilty pleasure, because again, if someone's aware of that perception but still likes it, then again, there's that shame / that like, I'm not going to come out with liking that, even though that intent was there. Whereas, you know, Tommy Wiseau, again, with The Room, he very much wanted it to be something good and whatever. So that intent wasn't there. It was just an accident that people end up really liking it. But again, so many people are able to enjoy it for something different to where, again, like I no longer think that it would be a guilty pleasure. And I don't think it ever maybe was. I think people always just like were tickled by it and like it just had this like charm. And so that's kind of, weird. I've heard like certain critics talk about like bad movies, and where they review them, they're like, this one seems like it's trying to be bad.
Yeah.
And for that reason, it turns them off.
Yeah.
To where they're like, this, like, it's just bad.
Yes.
It doesn't have any passion in it. It's just like methodical. And so the Transformer movies, I feel like they definitely can be a guilty pleasure still, because I do think, while they're really popular, make tons of money, there is that like kind of like, yeah, but these aren't good. And I've heard so many of my friends be like, I know, Kyle, that you're a big movie guy. And again, like, I'm like, I'm sorry that you have this perception that I'm like going to like really get on you. Uh-huh. But they're like, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And so the thing that frustrates me about Transformers, and I just have to say it because we're here and we're talking about it, is I think that you could make a movie that checks all the boxes for why people like those movies while also being an actual good movie.
Yeah.
Because they're always like, oh, like really cool action and like really cool effects. And like, it's just cool to see them transform. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all those things are fine. The problem is all the other stuff that gets in the way. So I think we can have it both. But anyway, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. That's just Kyle's thoughts on Transformers. And I'm very opinionated sometimes and must. You know what? Now I'm really realizing why my friends feel the way they do.
It all makes sense.
It all makes sense why I'm alone now. Yeah.
But yeah, what you said about feeling shame, that kind of makes me wonder, like, is something a guilty pleasure because you feel ashamed for liking it?
Mm-hmm.
What if you don't like, what if it is something that everyone decides, yeah, this is not really good. People shouldn't necessarily like this, but you feel no shame about liking it.
Yeah.
Does the guilty part of it go away? And mm-hmm. then it's just something you enjoy. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe. Cause like,
who decides what a guilty pleasure is?
God, Muhammad. I don't, Oprah. Yeah. I don't know.
Oprah. Probably Oprah.
Probably actually. Oprah. Yeah. Sorry, God and Muhammad. or same, depending on whatever. It's complicated. cause yeah, like, yeah, if someone has no, is fully confident in who they are and their tastes, like, maybe they are able to have perception that like, oh, I know this isn't like whatever,
yeah,
but I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's like, that's a very different attitude than like me secretly in my room listening to the Glee soundtrack.
Right.
And now I'm going to move forward and I'm going to be that person who's confident good. About it. But yeah, it's kind of, that is interesting. I think it really comes down to a, like, the public's perception and then that, how that informs your internal response and your internal or, and then your internal response and feelings and then your outward actions of like, do you talk about it or do you not share it with people? And mm-hmm. do you do said activity or engage with said media privately?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's interesting. I did sort of figure out though that most of it has to do with context.
Hit me with it.
And I mean, there's just so much under that, but like occupation, you know, your career, whatever you do, whatever circle you run in, your age, mm-hmm. your gender.
How many cats you own.
Exactly.
Mm.
For example, I have an example here. It says a company executive, if, for example, his guilty pleasure is playing video games.
Mm.
And that's not something he's going to advertise,
yeah.
really. But this is not considered a, and if someone looking from the outside, like that, regardless of how he feels about it, someone looking in from the outside would be like, oh, that, like, that's his guilty pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone's like a software developer or, you know, works at GameStop or whatever, then if they play video games, they're like, well, that's just part of their lifestyle. That's just
yeah,
who they are.
I like video games. Yeah, I can see that.
And again, this has to do with like societal norms and all that stuff, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it just like, I kept going back and forth between like, is a guilty pleasure like something that's internalized or something that's brought upon you by expectations? And it's just like, every time I was like, yeah, but it's this. Oh, yeah, but no, but it's really about how you feel about it. And, but mm-hmm. yeah, but other people are going to say that, you know? And so anyway, but a lot of it had to do with context or, you know, if a male person enjoys something that is typically female, whatever mm-hmm. that means.
Yeah.
Then it's like, oh, that's his guilty pleasure, you know, or that person might not feel like they can admit to it because people would make them feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was a,
I think you've cracked the case wide open.
I don't know.
I think, no, shut up. I think it's true.
I think it was a ball of yarn and now it's like all over the place.
No, but I see it's all over the place, but it's forming a ball.
Yeah.
So we're right back where we started. Okay. No, I do think the context is a big part of it too. I think the, like I said, I still feel how I do about the perception, yada, 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 but it really does change depending on your setting to where like, mm-hmm. even like, someone at work, a guilty pleasure for them may be like LARPing.
Yeah.
They love the activity. And when they're with those people, there would not be any shame, but then it would make sense. Like they're not a sellout mm-hmm. or what, but it makes sense that at work, they may not advertise that because you know, other people might not be into it and would like judge them for it. And so that's a weird thing too, where it's like, well, just because you keep something private doesn't necessarily mean you're ashamed of it. There's a strategy to certain things.
Sure.
And so yeah, this businessman, sure. he may be like, I don't need to tell people that I play video games because like I'm trying to be professional. I'm trying to, you know, not necessarily let people know who I am. I have like a job to do and I'm like going to work for this purpose. I have my other life outside. But to where, yeah, like a gamer would be like, why are you ashamed of gaming? Like gaming's the best.
Yeah,
like I talk about it all the time. Uh-huh. But yeah, it's like you put someone somewhere else, you know, again, in keeping with the theme of Kyle thinking about things that do not matter now slash are not even close to him. I'll probably have guilty pleasures with my like father-in-law, and like to where I'm like, I don't want him to know this about
me. Sure. Yeah.
You know, like I'm proud of it and I'll tell my wife, but maybe he doesn't need to know fill in the blank about me.
Well, that's interesting then, because it's only a guilty pleasure in relation to someone else and not society or not yourself. Like that's super weird, because that's a whole other thing where you'll have something that's a guilty pleasure only in the context of this other person knowing about it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But just want to interject, I love that you felt the need to explain CGI but not LARPing.
Everyone knows what LARPing is. Can you? I don't feel like I can give a great explanation for LARPing.
So LARP is live action role playing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
I know is the like you dress up in medieval and you hit each other with like plastic
with
stuff.
Foam swords. Yeah, that's essentially what it is. It's just like what people did as, and I'm not trying to put it down, but literally what people did as children. Just like it's like I know it sounds like
trying to put it down.
LARPing is something a child does.
I'm not trying to make you feel like a child, but what you did is what a child does.
I think there's so much to be celebrated about childhood, and I think and I admire that. And the fact that people can do that and not feel any shame about it is great and amazing to me and admirable. But yes, it's essentially what it is, like sword fighting and all that stuff. And I don't know if there's a story element to it or if it's just kind of setting a battle scene, but anyway, that's what it is. It's just live action role playing.
Yes. LARPers, if you're listening, no shame. And I would definitely participate.
I feel like it's so condescending to tell people that they don't have to be ashamed of doing
it. I think you and I both are doing a terrible job of making the LARPers in our audience so feel loved and accepted. Like, the more I say to try to like, you know, diffuse the situation, I think I'll just add fire. So
I know. It's like, don't feel bad that you're acting like a child.
Oh my gosh. You're just making it even worse.
I know, but I'm like making fun of myself. But then
I've seen it. In Siloam Springs,
there was a big
group, and it always looked cool. Something maybe that would be more interesting to me, just because like if I'm gonna, I couldn't really get into like the plastic fighting, just because it's like, unless there's like really,
you would need real swords,
Well, no,
actual murder.
Yeah. No, just like the how the game would work. Is it like a fairness of like, oh, is it like I got your arm, so now you can't use it? Do they play by those rules?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of like honor system stuff.
Because if you're just hitting me with a plastic thing, that's not fun. But if it is kind of like fencing and like the strategic getting this person's, you know, like weak point and they can't use it, and then like fake, like, oh, I slash you across the throat, so that means you're bleeding out.
Yeah,
now,
I mean, it gets pretty involved. There's a video circling around where it's
is it circling around, or are you just on the LARPer website?
Since I filmed it. I saw it somewhere online, but it's like this LARPing kind of group of people, and they're all in this like battle, and there's all sorts of stuff going on, and then this guy walks in and he's like, firebolt, and this other guy that he's like supposedly aiming at, nothing's happening. He's just like swinging his arm at him, pretending to throw firebolts or whatever it is that he says he's throwing. And this other guy has to like flinch and like fall over from that. So it gets really involved. So anyway, this was an interesting tangent.
You'll have to send that to me so I can include it in the show notes.
Yes, I'll try to find it.
I want to watch it, and I think other people should watch it too. I do want to go to a Renaissance fair, which I know LARPers frequent, slash there's lots of LARPing there. Yes. I have no problem with the dress up aspect.
Yeah.
Make believe, you know, playing pretend. Like I'm very much into that.
Yeah.
It was more the technical, like, can I feel like I actually won this game? Mm-hmm. It sounds like I can. So maybe I need to give LARPing a shot.
Yeah.
So Kyle.
All that to say, like, I admire people who, because I mean, if
like
you,
like
I'm not going to dig myself into another hole. This one
have a shovel.
Next to me is pretty big already. But I think this circles back into what we're talking about, but enjoying something that, and I'm sure they don't feel any shame about it. That's the thing.
They shouldn't.
That's why it's great. even though I'm going to try to generalize here, but in the grand scheme of society, I feel like most people don't really understand it and mm-hmm. might look down on it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do admire that.
I think, you know, in shining the spotlight on myself, I'm trying to get better about being open about the things that I like, mm-hmm. and being confident in it. I admit, like, at work and stuff, I'm not quick to be like, I write poetry, you know,
right?
Because there's a, and again, it kind of comes back to that perception idea. There's a stigma, or there's just a generalization of like what that means. And so in this case, people are right. Because yeah. usually they think, oh, angsty, you know, like romantic. And I'm uh-huh. like, that. Both of those are very true for Kyle Stuck.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you know, I like to think it's not just exactly like the box they have. But that's an example to where it might be considered a guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
I really don't see it that way. But at work, I may act like it is because I may not fully get into it. Again, I've tried to get better at talking about at work with people, and I've sure. had good conversations.
Yeah.
And I think I'm now very much at the like, oh, I'll just talk about my art and it's mm-hmm. fine. It's not a big deal. But I think the context point is fantastic. And it is interesting because it's like, okay, so there is both, there's inner guilty pleasure,
yeah.
and then there's like situational base / like you said, actual context, like
yeah.
physical context,
uh-huh.
Social context,
uh-huh.
guilty pleasure. And that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it just points to how humans are weird.
Yeah. Well, and it's what you're saying about the poetry too, that made me think of like if someone my age comes up to me and is like, what do you do in your spare time? And I'm like, oh, well, I'm actually working on a comic book right now. That's, most of the time, that's a pretty successful anecdote that people latch onto.
Mm.
I'm trying to remember how it went the first time I tried to explain it to my in-laws.
Like, oh, okay.
Like, or, and I think Julia, my wife, was the one who brought it up because she was excited for me. She's like, oh, well, Noah's working on this comic book. And then they're like, oh, well, what does that involve? And I'm like, oh, this is... I'm not 6 years old, I promise.
Yeah.
But again, that's like the one-to-one, like, oh, I never feel guilty about this or kind of weird about it. But mm-hmm. all of a sudden, I feel like I have to kind of talk it up, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And not just be like, oh, I love drawing pictures with text. And Julia likes to call them picture books.
Ooh, I like that too.
And she's like, oh, are you going to read your picture books and draw your picture books? Which is great.
That makes you feel like a child, probably.
Exactly. This is me celebrating childhood, all that stuff.
It's beautiful.
But anyway, yeah, it's just really funny that that kind of situational guilt when it comes to things you enjoy.
Yeah, I wish that we could change that.
I wish that would go away.
Yeah.
You know? But
I think it's normal for like the certain social things. Like I've had, you know, like it's kind of exactly what you're saying. Like I've had friends or family, and when they're introducing me to someone, they'll kind of just like throw that out there,
mm-hmm.
and it's out of kindness, and there's good intent there, but it's kind of like it's a lot of people don't know how to take it because then it's kind of like, oh, you're telling me I have to talk about this with that person
mm-hmm.
who I'm just meeting.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's like when it's like, oh, well, Kyle's a writer. And then they'll kind of like moonwalk away. And it's kind of like, okay, you guys talk now. And so the person has to go, oh, so what do you write? And then I'm like left going, well, so it's complicated. So there's thing, you know, like trying to describe the plot.
It's like a very small version of someone outing you.
Yeah.
Like, just like, oh, this was not in my timeline for today.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to readjust my brain to try to explain this to a person who, if they understood this kind of stuff, I already would have brought it up because it's usually the first thing I talk about to people who would understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I leave it out of the conversations for people who might not, you know, get it right away. So anyway,
it's just like that, like quick shame. And it's like, why am I ashamed? Like, I love this stuff.
Yeah.
But it just in the moment, whether you don't want to talk about it or it's just too complicated, too much hassle, it's just kind of like, this quick, like, okay, like, yeah, you just kind of like your voice changes and you try to quickly like not talk about yes. it, but then it makes it look like you don't like your thing or that you're not confident, which is hilarious.
Yeah. You either have to talk it up or like downplay it. It's like, well, I mean, just every once in a while, I'll like draw some stuff. I'll doodle around, but you know.
I'll just doodle, bro. The
rest of the time, I like work out.
What do you like? What do you think is popular? I do that.
I volunteer at the homeless shelter.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right. So context, that was a tasty note. Where to next? What else are you thinking? What else are we jiving with?
Well, this, like, again, this is such a rabbit trail prone kind mm-hmm. of topic, but eventually I was like, all right, well, you know, if you unpack it all the way down to something, whatever this piece of art is, because again, this is in the context of art, and you can have guilty pleasures for anything, and, you mm-hmm. know, food, activities, whatever. But in this context, I was like, okay. Everything leads back to what makes art good or bad.
Oh, so we're going there.
Huh? And then I was like, oh, I don't want to get into this.
Pandora's box.
And then again, there's the whole eye of the beholder thing and all that stuff.
Shut up, Noah.
I'll throw up.
No, but, this is a good direction.
I don't know. It's very hard to... And I've tried to talk about this in the past with people, but it's very hard to advertise the type of thinking where you're like, oh, you know, just like what you like. And then I you know, don't follow my own advice. Mm-hmm. And also it's hard to not come across sounding very, you know, kumbaya, like unopinionated about everything, and everything's good and everything's mm-hmm. great, because then it's just bland and boring. And so
yeah.
if there's no bad stuff, then nothing's really good.
Oh, the deep question, deep thoughts.
Life.
Give me a beer.
Yeah, really. But, yeah, anyway, I don't know if you have any thoughts on the good art versus bad art, just like as a quick relation to this topic, but.
Yeah, let's see if I end up digging myself into a hole. I definitely go certain art's better than other art.
Yes.
You know, like that, like, again, like my brain has to do that. Yeah, I think so.
To an extent, you sort of have to.
Yeah.
But like, again, is it just up to you or is there a standard? Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think about this. I was like, okay, let's say there is a standard. Mm-hmm. Stuff that falls below that is bad. Stuff that falls within that category is good. And that may change depending on the type of art or the person doing it. Mm-hmm. And again, like with art, there's a lot of value attached to where it came from more so than the piece itself. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, if let's say that standard goes away, let's say there's truly no actual scale for what makes something good and bad. I was thinking about it, like, what if that were to actually happen? Realistically, what would be the next event that would unfold? And I feel like I was like, okay, I feel like you would see a lot of what before the standard goes away, you would consider bad art. Mm. And you would get flooded with it would just get saturated because mm-hmm. everyone would be doing it for whatever reason. I mean, people who are never artistically prone probably wouldn't, but still, yeah, I think you'd get an influx of a lot of bad art.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like a lot of people would, like, they would, you know, release a lot of their inhibitions where they'd be like, oh, I'm free to create now. I don't have to, you know, be upheld to the standard. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to do my stuff. I'm my worst critic. I'm the hardest on myself more than anyone else. Now I'm doing this stuff. Oh, people are enjoying it. Now I'm being artistically creative and open and productive. And then maybe this stuff before that standard went away would have been considered good, but that person would have never produced it. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, this is the whole thing.
It's a dilemma.
But I do wish, I think if we like meet in the middle of those two things, I do wish that there was a way where people could kind of be released from the chains of expectations mm-hmm. in that way where it's like, just do it. You know, it mm-hmm. might be bad. I think maybe it all comes down to being okay with stuff being bad.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's the compromise where people should feel okay about making bad stuff if they genuinely tried. Mm-hmm. If you're intentionally trying to make something bad, I think that's a whole different thing. And yeah. maybe you have like different goals, whatever. That's not what the issue is here. If people genuinely try and make something bad, I think you should be okay with it being bad. And maybe that means being okay with people telling you that it's bad.
Trying to make something good and having it.
Yes, sorry.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And so anyway, I think maybe like the
calm down, Noah.
Hit the table.
Very passionate.
Maybe the just kind of the idyllic projection of this idea would be, oh, well, just more people being open with their art and creating stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is a very like kumbaya kind of thing, but
kumbaya,
like,
my Lord.
Kumbaya. Oh, I was going to harmonize. Kumbaya. But I wish people would just create and be okay with it being bad and just improve.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's a whole can of worms.
It is, and it's on my face. They're slipping and sliding around. One's in worms. My mouth. I don't appreciate it. But now I'm going to be able to go fishing tomorrow, so thanks for that.
Go. Teach a man to open a can of worms, and you
teach him
bait.
That's the saying, right?
That's how it goes.
No, I think that's yummy. I hope, I wish, too, that we lived in a world where people we're able to let go of fear or the idea that they have to reach a certain standard to be allowed to create because that opens the deep question of like, well, what's the point of making things? And, mm-hmm. you know, part of that would be like, well, to entertain others or to help others or whatever, but like a lot of it too. And I think, you know, not to again, say a kumbaya-ish thing, but it's like, it should be for yourself.
I don't know what the actual word is for that type
I don't
of
know either.
Mentality, but it's really kumbaya seems to.
I think it encompasses what we're trying to say. But yeah, it's like you should make stuff for yourself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it doesn't feel good, as we've discussed in a previous episode, to be critiqued.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't have any you know, value on who you are as a person.
Yes.
And so, yes, if you put out bad art and you keep, you know, putting out bad art and people consistently say your stuff's bad, like, sure, that reflects on you as an artist, but it doesn't reflect you on a person, and it shouldn't stop you
from
making.
It might actually reflect positively in your, like,
because it's like you
tenacity and just being like, well, I'm doing this for me. Mm-hmm. You know, if you happen to enjoy it, then great. If you don't, then that's fine. Don't consume this thing that I'm making.
Yeah. I hesitate to say this because there's creators who make terrible things that I keep getting bombastic with and I wish they'd stop.
Yeah.
But I, in terms of principle, I do have to settle on the, like, if you love creating,
mm-hmm.
and you maybe don't know this, but you're creating, but you consistently create crap. And it's all you're capable of making.
Yeah.
You should keep making it.
Yeah.
I hate saying that because I give my example and it's subjective, but like newer Adam Sandler movie or Kevin, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
It's just like, I can't stand it. And I'm like, just stop, put some effort in. But again, based on principle, I'm like, no, like if they're having fun
mm-hmm.
and they enjoy doing it, like there's a place for that and good on them. And so, yeah, I'm trying to go backwards to the first the big thought of you know what makes something good or bad, and again that alternate reality of what would happen if you know we or at least the world allowed that to be the case,
right?
And yeah, I think I don't know I don't want just like all this. Okay, I'm taking it back even further. So I do think that there is like quality to things. Mm-hmm. So let's look to film specifically,
okay.
because it's hard with like stories because it's there's a craft to how a story is told.
Yes,
sure, but it's a little bit easier than maybe the abstractness of a painting or whatever.
Sure,
so, but
sure.
with film, there is technical aspects that make something good or bad.
Yes,
and so you can look at a film and be like, it is not well shot,
mm-hmm.
you know? And when I say that, you know, like the imagery, both, and it could be like in how it's lit or the crispness of, not Christmas, but the crispness of someone's face. Had to clarify. Sometimes I slur words.
The Christmas
of their face. I've been drinking. Happy holidays. Eggnog will get you. Anyway. And then same with sound. If you have bad sound, if, yeah. you know, it's crinkling and crackling and Christmasing all over the place. See what I did there? It's bad acting. That's a little subjective because I've had the argument with people where they're like, oh, his acting is really good. And I was like, I don't think so at yeah. all. But still, there's a little bit of critique there mm-hmm. for good and bad acting. And then the story comes in as well. And so with those guilty pleasure movies, it's like they have their place and they're valuable, but I do think there is a scale of like, but this film is better in terms of like a piece of art. And I think that's easier when it has that technical aspect.
Yeah.
Because you can go, oh, like due to the quality of what we say, like something sounds good or mm-hmm. looks good, this film is better. Now, it may not be better on enjoyment. Like, a critic or someone who is, you know, just really loves film
yeah.
may enjoy that like beautiful drama or whatever just as much. It's, we can't measure it, but just as much as someone, again, who is maybe watching a Transformers film. Like sure. they leave Transformers all pumped up and just encouraged and like they had their escapism or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that's why we have like Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb and all these rating things because – and I, obviously you and I and everyone will disagree with critics, will mm-hmm. will disagree with ratings, but I think that their job and I mean, what they do a good job at, again, not always, but is looking at a piece of art as a whole and in its context. And so
yeah.
they look at it from the context of, was work put into this?
Mm.
Is there a craft to it? Is there a skill to it?
Yeah.
And is it digestible? Because they'll have like blockbusters on there, like, you know, Mission Impossible
sure.
came out and they're not like comparing it to Sophie's Choice or Rain
yeah,
Man or like
yeah.
these very, you right. know, they're going, this was a well-made film. If the action didn't work in it, you know, if it wasn't shot well, like that film, I believe would get, you know, docs on it. And sure, maybe it'd be enjoyed just as much by someone who's not a technical.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I watched a dumb fun action movie.
Yeah.
And it would still have its place there, but I don't think it would have that technical whatever. So for me, that's kind of where I fall.
Yeah, it's yeah, okay. I was going to have some pushback on the technical standard for things because I do think that there have been times where there was a certain way that things had to be done at the time and then mm-hmm. someone came along and did them differently and mm-hmm. people were like, this works.
Yeah.
This is really good. But as you kept talking, you're like, but you have to take into consideration the context. Sorry, I'm just tripping over words there.
No worries.
But so if you are making, I'm making a blockbuster action movie, there are going to be some boxes you need to tick.
Mm-hmm.
If you're making a low budget comedy, then it's okay for it to not look like a blockbuster action movie. So mm-hmm. yeah. I do feel like that's quite a bit easier to do with film and maybe music as well.
Yeah, if it like it can be just as passionate and you could enjoy it because yeah. maybe it's your friends or maybe it's whatever. Yeah. But like,
and we were talking about this with TJ on the last episode, mm-hmm. but like just the intentionality of it and the heart and soul kind of put into it really do affect it a lot.
Yeah, and people pursue different sounds and stuff as well. And
yeah.
so, again, I feel like it'd be fair if, like, a record company listened to two artists and they went, like, well, this one's a little messy for us. It doesn't meet our standards of, like, what we want from sound. We're not going to include it. It's like, I get that because there is a quality. But a different record company could be like, we like gritty and not in terms of, like, dark and, like, blood. But, like, we
yeah.
like real-life sounding stuff or, like, things that aren't all put together because we find that beautiful.
Mm.
Going back to, like, the skill of something, you think about a comic book. You know, stories are going to be reacted to differently. Some people are going to like superhero stuff more or they're going to like The Walking Dead, you know, like violent, you
sure.
know, human, whatever. But there is a skill in how you tell a story. And you and I are learning that as well of like, where do you put the dialogue bubbles to where it makes sense, your eye can follow how to read, because you can do that badly.
Yeah.
And again, someone could enjoy it still, mm-hmm. but on a technical level, there's people who would be better than us, slash are yes. better at us. And even in pacing, that's something mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out. And in, we were just talking about printing. Again, someone could put out a better product than us. So it's like we do have some rules or some guidelines as humans, as creatures, that it's like there are things that you can look to and see quality. But it does, yeah. it is tricky in terms of, bring it back to the top, guilty pleasure. It comes down to the context and uh-huh. the enjoyment and the intent of like what something means to someone. I don't know. Yeah. It's big and stuff I'm tired.
It's super interesting. And it feels like it, like if we can maybe dig out a gold nugget from the the mess of the topic.
That's right.
If you're a creator, maybe that means create within your means. Mm-hmm. So like, if you are a small production, run with that. Mm-hmm. Don't try to make a big, cause I mean, it's, again, it's obvious if a small company, to stick with the film example, is if a small production company with very little money decides that they want to make a copy of Mission Impossible mm-hmm. or whatever, and it's really going to show at the end. If you watch the movie, you're like, ooh, these guys, that fell short. But if you're going to make something like Napoleon Dynamite mm-hmm. with for no money, you know, and then that can, you know, be really successful. And again, that comes down to, if you're a writer, write about what you know, mm-hmm. And pulling examples from your own life and working with what you have. And I think a lot of people, and I'm the worst offender of this, get hung up on the gear and yeah. everything that you need to create this thing that you're looking forward to. That's like way in the distance. You're like, oh, I want to make $1 million movie.
Mm-hmm. Step one.
And then you're like, get $1 million. I have to have this giant vision for a story. Mm-hmm. And then you have no way of making it. And then it gets chopped down to all these things. And so that's why I think we were so drawn to the idea of doing comics. It was like, oh, I think I'm okay at drawing. You think you're okay at writing stories. Let's put those two together. That's very accessible. It's still a ton of work.
Oh, yeah.
But it's realistic, at least, you know, it's mm-hmm. in terms of budget. And again, everything in life, and this is the great frustration, is it all comes down to money. But
money talks, baby.
If you're able to make time in your life to be creative, then use it wisely. Don't use it to look forward to these bigger things. And again, there's a lot of value in dreaming and mm-hmm. and having big aspirations. But I think if you're trying to at least put something out. And we've had to, you know, go through this struggle too, where it's like, okay, well, what is this giant, what is the biggest, grandest idea for a comic that we have? Let's run with that. And it's like, well, maybe we should do this other thing that yeah. maybe is a little lighter and a yeah. little something that we can put out more quickly.
Yeah.
So these are like, there's so many things to think about when you're trying to put something out, but maybe, I guess that's the piece of advice that we can kind of gather from all that is
no.
just,
I don't want to do
no.
it. What was your thing? Because I want to add to it. You said in terms of the advice, be smart with your creative time.
No, be dumb.
you said something. What was it like about being strategic with
yeah, just work within your means, basically.
So I think adding to that, if you don't have an immediate thing.
No,
I don't want to interrupt you. Okay. Was like, yes, and then, but also do it for just the sake of making. Cause like you're saying, like, yeah, like,
oh, yes.
Like,
yeah,
I love those points together because yeah, it's like, think about who is your audience, who you are, mm-hmm. what your means are, mm-hmm. what you can actually accomplish and do that. Again, I'm not trying to take the dreaming out of it because I am a dreamer. And so I do that as well, but it's like all you have.
Well, and you may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one.
Oh my gosh. It's another song reference. But you're not going to get anywhere if you're always trying to be this thing that you're not capable of being in the moment.
Right away.
Yeah, right away. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You take steps, you make out a game plan. And so, I mean, that's what we've done. So, but then also, don't get hung up. And I have to remind myself of this too, on the, you know, the result. Do it because you love it. And so I love that you said be strategic, because I do think it's important. I just wanted to throw that in also, doing it for just because you love it. And we talked about that earlier. It's like, yeah, if people don't like it, that's frustrating. I definitely understand. I fully understand how it can just kind of condition you to not want to do that thing anymore.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel good. But ultimately, even if I don't like it, like I'm saying this, like your work has value regardless of what anyone thinks. So you may go, oh, Kyle, and again, I'd be humbled if this actually happened. I'd be a humbled fool. but if someone is like, oh, no, and Kyle encouraged me, then they sent me their art and I looked at it and I was like, oh, gross. Like, this isn't good. that I would not want them to stop making.
Oh, yeah.
Because... And it would be, you know, hard to have that conversation, but it's like, who cares what no one I think, you know, who cares what anyone thinks? If it makes you happy and you enjoy doing it, and you know that, like, you know, if you're a creative, you know, if you want to make stuff, just do it. And again, like try to do it in a way that, can help you out or can be feasible, but ultimately, like, just have fun with it.
Yeah. I love it, because it's like, ultimately it's like, there is a standard. But who cares?
Yeah, really though.
Yeah. Like, don't worry about it. You know, just do stuff. And then, quick.
You're good, man.
It's a quick thought. I was thinking, if the thing that you have in your head, your aspiration, your big thing that you're leading up to, is something that you think is of high quality and that people will enjoy, but you're not able to do that at the moment, don't let that stop you from putting stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So do the stuff that you can at the time until you get to that point. And eventually you're going to make something that people are going to enjoy. And I'm saying this, like, this is a very hopeful way of thinking, because maybe you'll never make something.
Maybe you'll like die.
That. Yeah. Maybe you'll get hit by a truck. But
that I'm driving. No.
Sorry, Kyle, go ahead. Going around crushing dreams.
Literally.
But yeah, so anyway, I think that's a really good point.
And to add to what you're saying, like, there is a scale. Mm-hmm. I love that. Like, there is a scale. Ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe through ignoring it, you'll find something that then is awesome on the scale. Because like we said, like, doing everything like everyone else is dumb.
Yeah.
And so... you think of all like the revolutionaries and art and stuff at the time, they were being, a lot of them were told like, this is bad.
Oh, yeah.
This is stupid. Mm-hmm. Again, you and I recently talked about this, but the trailer for the Vincent Van Gogh movie came out. What's it called? Something about the stars, maybe.
Or The Fault in Our Stars.
No. Or I can't remember. We'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, yes.
So look there. But yeah, new movie about Vincent Van Gogh starring Willem Dafoe. And I told Noah that I just got teary-eyed because, you know, seeing no one like his stuff and like even like ripping it up or like kicking him out of towns, it's like that would be a very understandable like situation where someone goes, I don't want to do this anymore because I've been told it's wrong and it's bad.
Yeah.
And so, but later, you know, years later, like we look back and we're like, dang, that guy was awesome. And so the point shouldn't be, oh, I'll make stuff now because people in the future will like it.
Yeah.
Probably not. And you don't know, but, it doesn't matter. You should just make it. And maybe through making it, there will be something beautiful. That's not the point. You should just do it, but you never know. And a lot of, again, the revolutionaries, like even we talk about Image Comics a lot, you know, like, hey, like maybe we don't want to always, do superhero stories where people are telling us what to do. Let's go off and start our own company where we just create our own characters. And again, from the outside, people are like, what are you doing? Like, you should just stick with the safe gig and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, it's very successful. And so with you and I, like, we don't know where we're going. We have a strategy. We try to talk about stuff consistently and we're doing our best, but And now it's easier, but still it's like, we're two young pups,
right?
Just trying to make our own stuff. And there's probably better business savvy ways that we could go about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I want to be open to it, but at the same time, like, you and I just want to make our stuff. And I was, again, reading a story today about a girl and her really bad experiences with working with Marvel as a comic book writer. Mm. And I just was like, you know, as much as I long for the paying gig,
yeah,
and all that stuff, it's like, I would hate having to write something and then constantly having someone get up in my face and make me change stuff. And then ultimately just cancel it too.
Well, and I feel like, especially in that context, it'd be so difficult because if you're working for Marvel, it's very likely that you grew up kind of idolizing that, mm-hmm. that lifestyle and that just kind of aspiring to be like, oh, the top of the hill for a comic book writer is to write superhero comics for Marvel.
Yeah.
And then you get there and it's like, oh, this is a job. and you basically end up, I feel like you end up hating your own superhero, like the one thing that you looked up to, all the like glamour is gone from it, everything that you thought was special. That'd be rough.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Noah, what else?
Oh, I was trying to think, is there this is like kind of moving on, but I was trying to keep unpacking this idea of a guilty pleasure even more. And I was like, is there such a thing as the opposite
of a guilty pleasure? Explain more.
And I feel like that could be so many things. Cause I was like, is it just like something that, so what is it contingent on? Is it contingent on other people not liking it or liking it? Or mm-hmm. is it on you? Like, is it internalized? Again, this is a whole debate.
Oh, man.
Is it like liking something along with everyone else? Or I was like, well, okay, if we take the opposite of the terms, is it disliking something that everyone else likes? And is there any value to that? Or do you just sound, you know, arrogant, or that you're trying to go against the grain, or you're trying to be edgy, or, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'd like, if everyone likes something, there must be a reason. Mm-hmm. But I feel like there's just as much value to that, even though maybe I don't get it on the surface level, just thinking about it. And maybe it's because I couldn't come up with an example of my own of that, but you should be able to not like something that everyone else likes and have that be okay. You know? So anyway, that was just like a side thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. We'll have to come up with a term. I feel like it's kind of like that. It's not the same thing, but it's like that.
Like a guilty dislike.
Guilty dislike.
Yeah.
But like when hipsters like don't like things because everyone likes them, it's not the same thing.
I think there's a stigma around it to where it's like, if you're just like disliking something because everyone else likes it, I don't know that there's any value to that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've like experienced this thing and you're like, oh, I don't get it. This is not for me. That should be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that like, falls under the umbrella of, you know, people getting peer pressured into enjoying something or doing something. And it's like, well, you're so weird for not wanting to partake in this thing. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, but I'm also not you. So
yeah,
I think that's a whole other topic, but I thought it was kind of interesting to
dive into that. I mean, off the top of my head, I have two quick examples and again, we don't have to get into it, but I felt that way a lot through, college with being a film major, like you said, there was a lot of like the this stuff is trash and then this stuff is art, kind of. And I'm not trying to like diss on like the school system, you know, it wasn't a toxic work or like school environment, but there were some of the like eye roll, like mm-hmm. okay. And so for me, and again, it's all subjective and so that's fine, but like two films that I remember, it's like, A was Citizen Kane. I just was like so bored.
Yeah.
And it's not like because it's old. Mm-hmm. Like that's like, I think that's a dumb example when people say they don't like something. It's like, why didn't you like it? Or why didn't you watch it? Oh, because it's old. I like plenty of old films. That mm-hmm. wasn't the problem. And again, the technical aspects are cool.
Yeah.
But for me, it does annoy me to always see it on lists because I go, I feel like we're just judging it based on the time context. I know we talked about context yeah. earlier and how it should play into why we like something. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, eventually, you know, there will be so many years in the future to where, how long are we going to hang on to these films because yeah. they were earlier to where now, like, again, an indie film
yeah.
on a technical level and maybe a story level, and again, stories are subjective, but would be so much better than Citizen Kane.
Well, and I think that, and I don't know if this movie is a victim of this, but, there's always this phenomenon where something gets like someone one day says that this is the greatest thing of all time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then someone down the line also says that. And maybe both those people think that. But then everyone else after that sort of has to say it because, well, it is, you know, and it's like, I do have a problem with that. We're just saying something is the best because that's what you're supposed to say,
mm-hmm.
you know. If you were to come out with a list based on you trying to be objective and thinking, oh, Citizen Kane, I don't believe is that great of a movie, and then you said top five most overrated movies of all time, mm-hmm. and put Citizen Kane at the top, there would be some backlash.
Oh yeah, there'd be a lot.
But that's just as valid as putting it at the top of the best movies of mm-hmm. all time, if you're being objective about it.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and again, I'm saying this, but now I'm thinking, well, but if you're being subjective about it, it's like, I believe that it's overrated.
Mm-hmm.
I have no good reasons. I just didn't enjoy it. mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. It's
And the other one, and I'll probably get some flack for this, but the original Blade Runner.
Oh, that's right.
I watched that movie, and that one's hard too because it's like, yes, I praise its influence on, mm-hmm. you know, cinema, and not just cinema, but like all the different art forms. And I'm like, that's awesome. And I don't want to fight the film. I don't want to fight Ridley Scott. I'm not yeah. angry at anyone.
Yeah.
But I do get annoyed where it's kind of like praise becomes white noise to where mm-hmm. it's just like, this is the greatest thing ever. This is the greatest thing ever. And I watch it and I'm like, yeah, on a technical level, what they did for the time is really cool.
Yeah.
And the kind of world that they built now has been mimicked so many times and it's mm-hmm. influenced in other things. I'm like, that's all great. But ultimately, are we judging something on how much it influenced something else? Or are we judging it on how it stands alone as a piece of art?
Yeah.
And so when I watched it, I was like, this movie's way too long. Like, the main character, I'm not into it.
Yeah.
And I was surprised because it had been built up so much. So when I started watching it and I was like, I'm not enjoying this movie. I was like, what's wrong
what
with
am I
me?
Yeah.
And so when the sequel came out,
mm-hmm.
I thought that was a much better film. And mm-hmm. again, it's like, well, it's newer, so they have the new technology. I'm like, yeah, but even from a storytelling,
right.
But that movie is not going to have the influence that the original did.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Unless like we're just saying that now, but in 200 years, like somehow it became whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think when you say that there's value to not liking something that everyone else does,
mm-hmm.
I wondered, I was like, well, what is the value? Like, what does that mean? Like, what yeah. is valuable about that? And I think ultimately it just comes to being an individual and mm-hmm. having an opinion because like you said, if everyone just did everything the same way, then the world would be boring.
Yeah.
And so conflict, not in like me taking a plastic sword and hitting you with it in mm-hmm. LARPing style,
mm.
but conflict in just, you know, like two opposing forces, two opposing views.
Yeah.
It's like that creates an interesting world to mm-hmm. where, yeah, if everyone disliked Blade Runner, everyone liked it, like that'd be lame. And so it's kind of this ironic thing
yeah.
where we need things that clash against our view,
yeah.
our own personal taste, to tell us what we truly love.
Man, I hate how much I enjoy hearing this kind of stuff because it feels like such, and I'm saying this like for the both of us, just for the topic in general, it feels like such non-advice. Like,
yeah,
like we're just saying stuff that it's like, well, this is how it should be, but it is. That's the frustrating part. It's like, yeah, well, yeah, you, it's easy to say that, but
yeah,
but why not? It's just frustrating that it's not this way.
Sure.
That there is so much condemnation and judgment for what people enjoy and all that stuff. And it's, yeah, it's just, it's a tricky thing because I just sort of get into my own head and I'm like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but people are like to also are allowed to not like what I'm saying about this topic.
Yeah.
And they can disagree with it. And
that's,
it's like,
right.
No, some things are good, some things are bad, and you have to take a side.
That's right.
And it's like, well, yes, of course you're entitled to that.
Yeah, I know. It really is like this weird, like passive, like,
oh, yeah,
sure, the, whatever you say,
the
it's
back
all
and forth.
Whatever.
I think that objectively and legally people should be allowed to disagree with what I'm saying about being,
I know,
objective.
Making any like universal like umbrella statement or whatever is just like problematic.
Oh,
it's,
I
like
know.
I know. And again, like if people come up to me with specific examples, I become somewhat a hypocrite. I still stand on this, but again, someone's like, what about bronies? I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I think it's like, weird and yeah. I don't like My Little Pony. But again, if you like put a gun to my head, you're like, well, should it be allowed to exist? / like, can they like it and still be a, you know, whatever? It's like, well, yes.
Yeah.
Because I like my own weird crap. And so the same rules, the same logic. I'm like, well, if I'm this way and I like this stuff, then it can apply to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is like, you know, we're like on like a patio with like wine and we're smoking cigarettes and we're just philosophizing about the world.
Yeah,
it's all obnoxious, like, and pretentious. I'm sorry.
I always feel like it's going to be received as like, people are going to think, man, this guy has such like delusions about his enlightenment, where it's just like, do you really think you have it figured out? I'm like,
yeah.
No, not at all.
Smarter and more famous and fill in the blank people have already talked about this,
like,
and better than you.
Yeah,
have.
Like I don't have any of this figured out. This is so confusing to me, but for some reason I do feel like, you know, that's the proper way. But again,
well,
what is it? Yeah.
We've always had the disclaimer, fools is in our title.
Yeah.
And
maybe that should just be the whole title.
Yeah. Not even humming, just fools, yeah. Idiots. But in kind of being a little bit meta with all of this, I mean, like even the podcast, like hopefully other, you know, we want people to listen. We love engaging with our listeners, but if it's just at the very least, even if it's terrible and no one likes it, you and I are able to have these discussions.
Yeah.
And even if it's like we're way behind on the, like, you know.
Yeah, like this is such a 2008 topic, guys.
Exactly. Like everyone's like, yeah, we already know all this.
we've talked about this.
Yeah. It has been famous, whatever. At least you and I are able to have a platform to get there.
A lot of this, I'm like, I need to externalize this. Otherwise, it's going to stew and go nowhere.
That's right. So we've accomplished something with this. But this podcast / this episode may itself be a guilty pleasure. Who knows?
Yeah, for us. Yeah,
yeah.
Where everyone's like, ugh, this is bad.
That's objectively bad.
Yeah. You're allowed to think that.
It's fine. Any last closing thoughts, Noah, on this before we skedaddle?
Man, I don't know. Like if one person can hear this, these ramblings and be like, you know what? I should make the stuff I was wanting to make. Then that'll be such a victory.
Yeah.
Even just if I'm that person and I'm like, oh, I'll do this. Even if people don't like it, then I think that'll be good.
Yeah.
Again, we're not here to give any kind of advice or anything, but
I mean, we are, but we're not.
Yeah.
Exactly. We are here to talk about things and tell you what to do, but ultimately, like, maybe listen to us, maybe don't.
And maybe one day we'll stop being so vague.
Yeah.
About stuff.
Maybe we'll grow some
general
spines and just actually tell you what to do or whatever. I don't know.
But then again, I don't want to be that person. So, yep.
Man, what a trail. What a journey we have ahead of us, Noah.
I know.
But yes, if again, we're just starting now, we haven't been around the block too long, but if you have any tales of your own dabblings with this, or you feel inspired to start, please share those with us. We would love to hear about that. Again, like if you're like, hey, look, I made this thing, feel free to send it to us. Again, we may not like it, but I'm like, the fact that I got it from you and that you did it ultimately is going to be what matters. And that's super exciting. And you should feel pride. So
I would be very excited about that.
I might need to change my pants afterwards. And I usually wear two pairs of pants. So that shows how excited.
I think I might even like have just such rose-colored glasses about it. Just like, ooh, the first letter from a fan. I would be very presumptuous about it and be like, ooh, this is a fan. That's
It's like I wouldn't get hate mail.
Yeah, exactly.
We should frame the first letter that we get.
Right. Yeah, no matter what it says.
Yeah.
This is a cease and desist.
Oh, my gosh.
Please stop.
It's my alimony.
Yeah. Just frame this.
Cool. Well, I think it sounded like that's all we got for tonight.
That's all I got.
You've done so well.
I've exhausted my brain power on this.
But, again, I said it from the beginning and I said it throughout, but you led me with strong hands. You were my Sacagawea.
I don't know how strong my hands were on this one, but they
were coursing with blood.
I guess I was walking in front for some of it.
Oh, yeah. You were walking in front and you had a little leash.
I don't know
leash,
if it was in the right direction.
Little child leash on me.
Yeah. It was dark, though. Like, we couldn't see anything.
I stubbed my toe multiple times.
Yeah. It was bumpy as well.
Yeah.
There was some mud along the way. A few spiders, but I think we made it to the end.
Well, if you want to be led by Noah into the dark yourself, follow him. You can follow him on social media. Noah Bosley, I'm choking. Excuse me. I think that's the Holy Spirit telling me to be quiet. If people want to follow you on Instagram or the social media, like, where can they do that and what's your crap?
You said it and then you backtrack.
Well, I said
usually say
they can
me.
Follow you on Instagram, but what's the name?
Or you said Noah Bosley. Yeah, that is where it is.
It's just at Noah Bosley.
Yeah, at Noah Bosley. And now and recently at Ominous_media.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, that'll be our kind of hub for all the stuff. We'll post every time there's a new podcast episode. There's going to be a new post on there. And then any developments in current projects that we're working on.
Mm-hmm. And we do have some exciting stuff coming up. I'm not sure when we'll be able to announce it, but just to tease you guys a little bit, there is some fun developments with content that you will get to engage with. And that's all we'll say for now. Mm-hmm. If you want to hear me say more vague things, you can follow me on Instagram at Kyle_the_Ecuadorian. I haven't done it in a little while, but also just want to thank Josh Flynn again for our tasty intro and outro music. You can follow him on Instagram. Don't know what his name is, but it's in the show notes. Yeah. So you should do it. Noah, I hope you can get home tonight and get some good rest with your baguette. thanks for joining me in the studio again. And I'll see you next week.
It always makes me laugh when you talk about baguettes, but I don't know what the Ecuadorian equivalent would be. That
we'll figure it out.
But yeah.
Think and stew on it for next week, baby.
All right. I'll do it.
Ciao.